Well, I know since March they've had upwards of I think 19,000 lawsuits. So they have a lot of lawsuits
Well, we will
against them.
continue to cover them. I want to thank you so much, Isabel Chowdhury, for joining us, Senior Policy Manager for the National Women's Health Network. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by an amazing group of people sheltering at home as well as here at the studio. It's produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Adriana Contreras, and Maria Tarasena. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe.
And this is Sonia, your friendly neighborhood air room engineer, and it is time to bridge the gap.
Girls, we run this.
Greetings and salutations. Hello, you're listening to KBOO Portland here on your 90.7 FM dial. I'm Tammy, and on the line with me is the amazing and radiant Althea. How are you?
Hello, good morning.
And thank
you,
Sonia,
so
much.
How are
you? I'm well. Thank you, Sonia, a friendly neighborhood sound engineer. Sound engineer, more specific. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you, Althea, for being on the line. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling okay. You know, I got my 8 hours. I made some coffee. What more can I ask for?
Now, is that decaf or half calf?
That's regular calf, baby. I got a whole thing about. I'm suspicious of less than full calf. While I understand it, I did work as a barista for some time. And the decaf coffee, it smells a little funky, in my opinion.
Yeah, you were surprised when I told you I like half calf.
Yeah, I don't know that fans of the show might know that we haven't hashed this conversation out yet.
It's half the caffeine. It's double the pleasure, half the anxiety.
But here's my thing. Why not just have half a cup of coffee?
Why not just have an anxiety attack afterwards?
Look, I got, I'm a one cup a day gal. I try to keep it together, you know. I go tea in the evening if I need to kind of power through.
One cup a day, that's not actually drinking coffee. If you're not drinking 8-9 cups of coffee, chugging it one after the other, you're not really drinking coffee.
Are you shaming me? Is there a coffee elitism here?
I know, talking smack about my half calf.
Yeah, coffee elitism coming from somebody who does half calf is ironic.
Well, you know, we are in the Java City, Portland core, so it's part of the you know, you get your ID and you get your stickers and you get your coffee. It's like, you're now a connoisseur.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I've been to a coffee place that. They were like, oh, what kind of milk do you want? And I was like, oh, I'll just do, like, regular. That's fine, you know. And they're like, no, we don't have that here. Pick one from the list. And I was like, oh, it really had me on my heels. You know, what? Regular milk is actually not allowed at this coffee shop.
You're not going to sit here and enjoy yourself. What are you kidding?
We squeeze some number of, you know, oats or nuts or rice really hard. So you have to use one of those.
I'm a fan of oat milk. I'm not going to lie.
Oat milk is good. I kind of want to try making my own.
Oh. Huh. Good. Yeah, I guess you could do that. Yeah, I'd be interested to let me know how that works out. I'll grab a little bit and put it in my half calf.
Yeah, great.
Taking up full circle. Speaking of full circle, you are listening to The Gap. And as much as we love talking about coffee, we like talking about other things. And one of those things is social media and its influence on us. And today we're going to talk about, since we weren't on last week, we're making way for the Juneteenth special programming. And thank you, everyone, that was part of it. There was some really great stuff all day long. Special shout out to Mike Leverett for pretty much, you know, just being the mastermind behind it.
Way to go, Mikey. We appreciate you.
Woo! Appreciation. But what did happen yesterday, or excuse me, last week on Juneteenth, was that originally that was when Trump was going to have his Trump rally in Tulsa, and it was going to be on Juneteenth, but there was enough public outcry. I was like, why are you doing this? This is really highly inappropriate. So he did move it to the 20th. For people who might not know, in the 20s, like early 20s, 1921, there was a huge, basically like race massacre where people attacked black people and black businesses in the Wood Green district, and it pretty much annihilated the wealthiest black community in the United States at that time. And that happened in June, so for Trump to have his rally there during that month in that area was completely inappropriate, considering the type of people that he attracts, which he claims to not realize, but you know, everyone has opinions. So the lovely, as they're called, TikTok team decided to do something about it. And I do have a short clip from Insider Edition where they talk about it a little bit. So Sonia, if you can cue that up.
TikTok users may well be President Trump's latest adversary after fewer than 7,000 people attended his weekend campaign rally in Tulsa. Thousands of people who'd gotten tickets online didn't show up, thanks to a secret campaign on TikTok. We spoke with a couple of TikTok kids who told us they successfully trolled the president.
Was President Trump's fiasco of a rally in Tulsa sabotaged by an army of teenagers bent on making mischief? The disastrous turnout, a paltry 6,200, filled just one-third of the indoor arena. It left the president looking dejected and forlorn when he returned to the White House, his tie undone, red hat in hand.
President Trump was frustrated and angry over the turnout.
Trump was said to be furious.
Trump was reportedly stunned at the sight of all those empty seats. He yelled at aides backstage while looking at the endless rows of empty blue seats in the upper bowl of the stadium.
I'm sure people have been yelled at and berated.
Trump's former communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, told Inside Edition he wouldn't be surprised if heads roll.
I think it's a very bad metaphor, that walk of shame video for the president. I think that indicated to you how stressful that night was.
Today, a bunch of teenagers across America are taking credit for the Tulsa political disaster. Using the Macarena dance to spread the word, thousands of them reserved tickets for the Tulsa rally with no intention of going, grossly inflating the expected audience. Former top Republican strategist Steve Schmidt says even his kids were involved in the effort to punk the president.
You have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of kids across America, millions of kids who are bored, locked down in some fundamental ways by the quarantine camps and activities are canceled, and they're up to some mischief on their phones and directing it at Donald Trump.
Trump nemesis, New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, gloated, "You just got rocked by teens on TikTok." We caught up with one of those TikTok teens today, 18-year-old Sophie Holtberg from St. Louis.
It didn't necessarily keep people out from going, but it made the numbers seem so big compared to what the actual show up was that it kind of was a success.
The Trump campaign is downplaying the role that teenagers may have played in the debacle. The fact is that a week's worth of the fake news media warning people away from the rally because of COVID and protesters, coupled with recent images of American cities on fire, had a real impact.
These media reports that he was somehow furious on the plane, there is no grounding in fact to that. He was very, very pleased with how the rally went.
Thank you, Insider Edition. And that was a little news blurb from last week when TikTok teens reserved a large amount of seats for Trump's rally that was happening in Tulsa on the 20th. And I think I'm going to probably butcher this last name, but Brad Pascal. The campaign manager for Trump says that over a million people registered, but only 6,200 showed up. So, you know, that's pretty pathetic. The stadium can seat about 20,000 people. So that was a huge blow, and the optics for that, which we know the optics is very important for the current administration, looked really bad. And before we start unpacking this, I was wondering, like, who thought of this? Where did this come from? And the most original post that I can find, but, you know, it's the internet and things are uploaded and deleted and up and reloaded and reshared. So what I did find was Mary Jalopp, at MaryJolaupp, seems to be also known as quote unquote TikTok grandma, seemed to be the person that first suggested the idea of, she was very outraged about the rally happening in the, you know, that time and place, and was suggesting, that, you know, teens just go to the website and purchase and reserve these tickets. Now, there have been a lot of different TikToks and different, you know, YouTubes and different means of social communication that also was amplifying that message. So I don't know if that was necessarily the first person, but it seems like that is one of the original videos from that time. So, I guess, Althea, it's time to unpack this. I just want to remind everyone, you can chime on in, you can pop in, or as I like to say, K-pop in, and give us a call, 503-231-8187. Althea, thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I have a small bone to pick with that news coverage, and that they're saying that, you know, teens are causing mischief, teens too bored at home, try to mess with the president, and then don't really, like, explore the reason why. Because I... As a sister to some teens myself, they are politically active and, like, politically aware and get a lot of information and organize in new and interesting ways, like they did through TikTok, to not just troll the president but make the president look bad because he was trying to hold a racist rally on a very important day. And even though he didn't do that, you know, do the, like, preventing the spread of that message, of his message, I think is meaningful, you know?
I've got a couple of thoughts on this.
Oh, Shona, go ahead. Thank you.
Well, we kind of... There was a little bit from the one young person that they quoted. She was saying how it didn't actually keep anybody from getting in who wanted to. It's just that less than a third of the number of people that the venue could hold actually wanted to be there. So there's that. And then this, what Althea brought up with the, they're just, you know, these bored teens just out and not really looking at why they're doing this, brings up for me the whole thing of the angry feminist, the angry black woman, like it's just, but never actually looking at why are we angry? What are we angry about? What has angered us? Because to actually investigate that would be to actually interrogate one's own role in making the things that have upset the people harmed by one's actions. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And we've got some callers, so I'm going to check them out.
Oh, thank you. And I do think there's interesting, they were saying, cities are in flame and there's an outbreak. Well, isn't the person that they're, in their own way protesting responsible for all this? So it's like, I think they even mention in their critique of what's happening, not realizing that they're mentioning. And I did want to mention that I did pick this specific one because of the way that they were describing it. Because it was very much like, it felt very deathtone and detached from what this was happening. So you said that we do have some callers. If we're ready to take some on, then we...
Actually, that line was... Oh, here we... Hold on.
No problem. Go ahead.
I think it's interesting that, it gets... That there's this tendency to, trivialize teenagers and young people and what their desires are, and that, thinking about the climate movement, it kind of seems like it's like, oh, actually, we should let youth lead that movement. Mm-hmm. They have a unique stake in the matter. And then seeing, issues of national politics or Black Lives Matter, that same sort of tendency of teens don't know what they're doing. And granted, teens do some stuff that actually doesn't have a whole lot of greater resonance. What comes to mind is that whole meme of that we're gonna raid Area 51 and we're gonna get the aliens out. And people did actually end up going and dancing near Area 51 with the military right there. That is an example to me of a meme that spreads on the internet that doesn't have a whole lot of deep political resonance. But I don't think that necessarily discounts, this kind of thing that people who are on a social media app were able to do.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot to unpack there because, TikTok is a Chinese social media app. K-pop has a lot to do with that, with this last month. K-pop stans, as they call them, comes from stan is when you, not a copycat, but it's someone when you worship someone or idolize someone. And it comes from an Eminem song where there's a person called Stan who writes letters to Eminem about how much he wants to see him and never does, and ends up doing horribly violent things in the name of Eminem and worshiping him. So there is it's very layered stuff, right? But there is the K-pop stans and the fact that this is a Chinese app, and some may say because it might be foreign interference. I don't know. I'm just saying. So, were there any callers that were?
Yes, we have. I believe John, are you still with us?
Yep.
Go ahead. Here. You're live.
Good morning, folks. I enjoy listening to your conversations. I think I've heard two or three of them now. Yeah. Every other Friday, is it?
Seems to be just about every Friday, but we were preempt last week because of the special programming for Juneteenth. But yeah, appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring on a pop quiz. It's a modified question that I'm adding to. So here's the question, your pop quiz of the morning, only one question. What's the difference between apathy, ignorance, and hate? That last part is my modification. The original answer was, I don't know and I don't care. I don't know who invented that, but it's pretty clever. Well, when I added hate, what do you get? Okay, I modified it to, what do you get when you, or what's the difference between apathy, ignorance, and hate? My answer is, there's no difference. This country's doomed because of all three. Which is a pessimistic thing to say, but it's partly also doomed because of the corporate media and their censorship of the full story, like one of you brought up a little bit ago about the TikTok thing. You know, if they delved into it, then we'd, wow, that's great. But they just they superficially cover the news quite often. And here's an example of that. I listen to NPR quite a bit because I don't have money for a computer, and I rely on the radio a lot. So I rely on KABU and NPR quite a bit. So when Trump was either running for president or right after he got elected, Gorsuch, the Supreme Court member Gorsuch, he was being interviewed by, or not interviewed, but questioned by Al Franken in the Senate, and Al was delving into a story where Gorsuch ruled against a black truck driver who disobeyed his company to save his own life, stuck in a blizzard with a trailer that wouldn't move, so he was told to just stay put till somebody came and rescued him. Well, it was super cold weather, and he wasn't going to survive if he just stayed put. And so he let the trailer go and drove off and got fired. And Gorsuch, it went up the ladder to Gorsuch, who was a federal judge, and Gorsuch ruled against the truck driver, ruled for the company. Well, when Al Franken interviewed him, what they played on NPR wasn't what the stuff was about. All they played, and I swear this is true, was the laughter of the audience to Al Franken's kind of comical response. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he made a kind of snide response, and then the laughter, and that's all we got. I couldn't believe what poor reporting that was. And that's just one example of many, many things I've heard over the years from NPR doing an extremely poor job of conveying the full story to us, and then they almost never follow up. They seldom follow up. So the public,
well, we really appreciate that. That's go ahead.
Well, the point is our so-called public radio and TV should be doing a much better job, and then everybody would go, no, they're excellent. We could defend them against the attacks of the right. So I want to bring up one other issue real quick, and then I'll get off the radio. I think the elephant in the room has always been the power of the Christian right with their network of churches and their communication between them, and the connection to right-wing radio, right-wing Christian radio, or not right-wing, but Protestant, mostly Christian radio. They're all kind of on the same page when it comes to all this stuff. And I've heard, I'm 66 now, I've heard since I was little, in church, and my dad got the NRA magazine, The Rifleman, I think it's called, or it was, and they've always demonized the liberals or the left or whatever, you know, as threatening to destroy this country with socialism. I'm kind of trying to summarize here, but with other issues, of course, gun control has always been the fear. They'll take away our guns and then turn us into commies.
Red Scare is real, yeah.
So what happened in Rwanda? They demonized the I always forget the Hutus and the Tutsis. You know, I can never keep which tribe is which. But We've been doing this in this country for decades now, and now people are anxious for a civil war to kill us. I told a UPS driver the other day, I expect it won't be a civil slaughter, because who's been collecting all the guns and ammo for decades now, and it's accelerating, and now cops are being heard on their cell phones somehow accidentally saying, "I can't wait to start the killing." You heard about that, right?
Oh yeah.
No, it's getting scary, and it's going to be a civil slaughter, I hate to say, because we're not ready for their decades of hatred are you folks aware of Clyde Lewis, who's out of Portland, ground zero on the Liars Larson show?
I think we could probably do some research on that, but I would like to clear up the airwaves. But you touched on some really great stuff. Okay. And
I'll tell you about Clyde Lewis another day.
Sure.
Sounds good.
I really appreciate your input. And
all right.
Yeah, you're
right.
John,
thank you.
When you can't rely on your television or radio, or just regular, traditional outlets for media and news consumption, it's scary. You don't know what to believe. You don't know, you question things that maybe you shouldn't, and you don't question things that maybe you should. And so social media, where I think, I don't know, obviously I wasn't there in its assumption. I think there was this idea where it could be a social thing, but more and more, especially during these times, social media is very, very political, and there are numerous fact-checking websites. People are, every website, every entity that wants to establish itself as legitimate in any way, shape, or form has a Facebook. When I was growing up, having a Facebook was something you have, like, because you're trying to just connect with friends in college. So, people realized that there was that need for raw, unedited news that was real. As much as the religious right, which has been in power for, a very long time. The country was, based on basically Puritan, so it is going to resonate within the culture and politics and wherever we see it, right? So that need was met with the internet. So you have things, like different outlets like InfoWars or the Young Turks, or where they're total opposites, polar opposites. RT, it's the need is out there, and it's being executed from some of the most unexpected places. And that's where I think the whole idea that TikTok teens, as they call them, and Zoomers are just, making this creating these things, like, they silence the president in a way that activists have not been able to do, just because this type of milieu of things, this were never together. So it's as much as they have the ammunition, as they say, the bad guys are just the people that are filled with hate for no reason for your fellow human being. There are a lot of people that are filled with a lot of love that will do a lot of things to protect one another. So that's just my two cents. But John, yeah, I feel you. It's hard to stay positive when you're fed all of this divisive stuff. Yeah, go ahead, Althea. Sorry.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on what John said. I think that, the way that news media is today, like, so much of it is driven by the need for clicks, for likes, for views, that's like what, companies are basing their business models on. That's what they have to be able to get, that
yellow journalism,
in order to stay solvent. And that isn't necessarily like the fault of any individual journalist, that they are trying to, generally speaking, that they're trying to be a bad actor in that way, but rather to keep their business going. And I think the way that media is right now, it requires us to be a lot more savvy in what we're looking for, and that, the kind of analysis and breakdown that we might need for certain issues isn't going to come easily or come from that first source that you go to. There are a lot of more like specialized places on the internet to like kind of find out that fact checking stuff. PolitiFact is one that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
That like dissects some of like politician statements, but it requires more from us than it has in the past, especially when you think about like as much as social media is great for spreading things that the news media can't spread or spreading activist causes like those teenagers who are on TikTok were able to do, it also had like as we saw in the last election spreads in like misinformation like very very easily, and that you know now we're seeing that Twitter is taking action in terms of fact checking and like not allowing certain types of political not allowing political ads on the site so that those kind of narratives don't get perpetuated, don't get blown into the kind of proportion that like can't possibly be controlled. But I think it definitely does. And for folks who didn't like grow up with social media or you know the internet and the way that oftentimes facts and the real story are decentralized, it's especially hard to get the real thing, to digest it in the proper way, and it requires more action from the individual. And so you know you see places like more commentary type programs on Fox News or even MSNBC are the ones that are you know breaking that down with that spin on it instead of the individual or somebody who you know is just kind of saying XYZ happened. That's what kind of came to mind for me in thinking about the shortcomings of the news system.
And I want to echo that local media, community radio, things like of that nature, they are so critical in getting news out. If it wasn't for local news outlets and newsrooms across America, we would not have any of the breaking news that we do. Anytime you hear anything, you hear the Texas Tribune revealed that, the Portland Mercury says that, you know, it's never like Fox News discovered that there is blood in your water. No. It's always, like you said, commentary and the whole idea of 24-hour news cycle. I mean, you know, coupled with the yellow journalism. And if back in, you know, if not too long ago, 40, 50 years ago, in order to get the news and to become educated with current events, the only thing you have to do is have a newspaper subscription. Now you have to have different fact-checking websites to make sure that what you're reading is even accurate, you know? It went from news bite to tweet, you know? It went from a whole idea to 200-something letters, characters.
Yeah, so. And fundamentally, like, news organizations need to do more work to gain people's trust.
Yeah.
It also requires a lot more work on the consumer end to figure out who is it that I actually trust, who has the track record in my community of serving the truth, you know? It takes more work, and I think that, you know, there's people who aren't prepared to do that work.
Ignorance is bliss, slash just easier, I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Because things are also just very overwhelming. So it's, you know, I don't want to say it's ignorance. It's just really, it's overwhelming, especially right now. So I agree with, I just want to say, John, if you're listening, just I'm telling you, it's going to be okay. Personally, I don't know it, but I feel it. And as long as like we you know just stay together, like we'll be all right. And I feel you with the anxiety and the scared, but no, not in our America, as they say. Sonia, have we got any more phone callers?
Not at the moment, but y'all listening could call 503-231-8187 and to join the conversation.
Thank you so much,
Sonia. You got thoughts on this?
Not at the moment.
Thank you. I mean, thank you for your thoughts. Thank you for not having thought all of it.
One thing that it made me think of was the Democratic candidate for Oregon Secretary of State named Shamia Fagan. When I interviewed her, we were talking about like what the greatest dangers to our election system are, and she highlighted like voter disinformation, and that to combat that, one thing that she had proposed was using some of the power of the Secretary of State to like help educate people on how to like recognize disinformation, how to like consume media on social media or from news sites more critically, which I just thought was like an interesting proposition. And I don't really know that that's like been done other places.
Yeah, I mean, this is all a brave new world. I mean, did you ever think that an app that was created by a country that was at some, that was like a American adversary, would be able to, you know, organize teenagers to, I mean, this is all just unprecedented, you know? So, I guess it's good to be ahead of the curve and try to create some sort of just like, all right, this is what is real and this is what is not, because this is reality stranger than fiction. And for people that are just tuning in, appreciate you. Hey, how are you doing? We're talking about how TikTok teens, is that just what I think we're going to call them? Or just,
I don't love it, to be honest with you. It feels trivializing a little.
It is. Users on the application TikTok organized last week, and I guess for a couple of weeks prior to that, to reserve as many seats as possible for Trump's rally that was meant to be on Juneteenth but was moved to June 20th in Tulsa, which would commemorate the month in which the Tulsa race riots happened, which annihilated Black Wall Street, which was at the time the wealthiest Black community in the state. And many would say that the community and Black society has not recovered since that. And, well, you know, if it can happen once, it can happen again, right? But in order to combat this hateful and really inappropriate act, users on TikTok mobilized to, as I said before, over a million people registered, but only 6,200 showed up. So I would say, in the words of the great ones, mission accomplished. But it's not just that. I want to also talk about K-pop. K-pop is Korean pop, and we have a little clip from a very popular band called BST.
BTS. You don't want the K-pop stands coming after you saying it wrong. It's BTS.
I changed it in my notes in red ink. Whoa. I heard it in your voice. You were confused.
No,
no,
powerful.
Kidding, guys. In the last month, they've done different things, like donate $1 million, you know, supporting publicly Black Lives Matter, and they, you know, use the phrase eradicate white supremacy. I mean, they were like all over social media, and people are standing them. And
should be clear that like the folks who are K-pop stans are basically like fans who really like Korean pop music. They're from all over the world.
I looked on YouTube for, you know, clips for this, and I mean, there's like 80 million, like, I just couldn't believe it. And it's things that were, you know, published not that long ago. It's not like it's been online for even a year for it to have so much. It's
right.
Unbelievable, right? Earlier this month, do you remember when the police department was flooded with their Twitter app and their
I think that was in Texas.
Texas,
they
yeah,
were
Dallas.
Asking for people to take videos of protests so that the cops could then go and arrest or prosecute the people who were protesting.
And the K-pop fans.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, they flooded their everything with K-pop videos and dance moves. And if you are a TikTok user, then there's a lot of different dance moves on there. So just a lot of dancing in general. So, you know, there's it's very layered. So, you know, one could say, well, this sounds like maybe it's some sort of foreign interference in a political, campaign or something. Some would say that. Do you have any kind of, you know, if you have any thoughts about that, you know, I'd love to hear them.
I mean, It's I guess it's a confusing assertion to make, just because while K-pop comes from Korea, it's not like an arm of a government, and one should think that police enforcement of, you know, laws is apolitical. Korean pop music is like a major cultural export for South Korea, and has helped to contribute to their, you know, cultural clout in the world at large. But, you know, it wasn't like orchestrated by these bands or anything like that. It was organized by folks who share a common bond of like loving Korean pop music, and that is something to organize around, and organize, I think, for these types of causes is really interesting and really kind of cool in my mind.
I think it's unbelievable. This is the whole thing, you know, I'm reading it, I can't believe this is, I'm like, is this from The Onion? But no, it's real. And then K-pop itself has a lot of issues around it, with the way that the you know, young adults and you know, sometimes teenagers are treated in these bands, and the way that they're managed, and, you know,
right.
There's a lot
it
of...
Also,
of
mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, it isn't to say that, you know, if you've heard the phrase K-pop stans before, you might know that they've also been, like, mobilized against, you know... who have like said something that they don't like K-pop or something, like that K-pop fans as like a group are like sometimes known to like take action in ways that's like, oh, don't anger them, don't say anything, better not say BTS wrong. So it's not to say that like group, and I think to call them like a group is like probably a misnomer, because it's just like
they were calling
obviously
them the army.
Decentralized.
They were, army.
BTS, that's what they call their fan base, but that they've been mobilized for different stuff before, not necessarily from one central person, which I think is like something that is a little bit harder to understand as far as social movements go that are happening right now, that they're not galvanized around one person. Even the climate movement wasn't started by Greta Thunberg, you know, like she'd become the sometime face of it, but it's not like about her or that there's people that will do what she says. And the same goes for, you know, politically mobilized K-pop fans or
anonymous. Listen, it's a lot. The whole idea that I think we hear a lot of is decentralized, you know, so if this is going to be what these groups are talking about, the K-pop group, you know, excluded from that, but this is what, you know, the climate groups can talk about, and groups like Anonymous, then they're gonna, you know, how they say, walk it as they talk it. So it seems like, and it also makes it maybe a little, I don't know, easier for organizing, and I really wonder how people who've organized like their whole lives in a more traditional way feel about this type of new age organizing, new wave organizing, because it is like, it's kind of like, who takes credit for this? K-pop? What? But that's the music genre. How does K-pop... It's like saying, yeah, grunge music put us on space. Like, what?
I've heard a couple grunge records that, you know, put me in space.
Yeah, don't discount it, Tammy.
I'm not discounting it. I gotcha. I'm sorry. So... I also want to mention that they've also donated to many of causes, including like the group themselves, BTS. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they've donated to different causes that, you know, like feeding children and, you know, like just very positive things and the like that I think we can all agree are positive. So it's interesting to see where all of this is coming from. And we are going to take a tiny break where we're going to be listening to a BTS song. I'm scared I'm gonna say it wrong, so I'm gonna,
you said it good,
really,
you
overpronounce
it.
and just gonna listen to a couple of minutes of it, because it is the shortest one is like 4 minutes. It's, you know, you don't see that anymore. Good for them. And then we can get back to talking about a little bit about whether this is trolling, and if it is this positive trolling? What is positive trolling? And also, has trolling been reclaimed from the far right and the incel part of the internet? Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back in a couple of moments.
All right. There is somebody holding, so I was going to put out there. Paul, sit tight, brother. We're going to get to you.
Yeah, you're listening to KBOO Portland and 90.7 on your FM dial. That was BTS. This is The Gap, and on the line with me is the lovely, jubilant, radiant, fantastico, Althea.
Hello. So many good adjectives. You really know how to start the morning.
I do. I wake up super early, so it's by this time I'm just like peaking. Sonia, you said that we had someone on the line. If they're still with us,
there were a couple of folks, but they seem to have moved on.
Ah, that's all fine. Right. That's
so,
fine.
Lines open. Oh, hold on.
Oh, exciting!
Yay!
That K-pop was kind of a jam. Not gonna lie.
I was very much enjoying it. And I think the tune is just it goes hard to say it. It's a banger.
Yeah, no, credit where credit's due, it goes.
I almost like not knowing the lyrics, but I was listening to a couple of songs when picking them, and a couple of them had English words in them, and it was, I like how they threw that in there.
Yeah, mixed it up, why not.
Yeah. I wonder if they do see if they do sing about social change and stuff, the translation, to see if that was like a thing, and that's why people are, you know, creating this type of change from it. But I did, while we wait on someone on the line, perhaps, and callers to call in at 503-231-8187 for the remainder of our program. So, Althea, is this trolling or is this the new type of organizing? / has trolling been reclaimed from the far right?
I think that's an interesting parallel to draw, because this kind of like decentralized online activism, making, you know, trolling, as you might say, a lot of it like has been occupied by white nationalists, alt-right folks on like 4chan and like the deeper parts of Reddit before they get deleted.
I got just the goosebumps just thinking about that.
Yeah. But that, like, there's, like, ways that folks on the internet have organized in the past around, like, white nationalist causes, whether that's, like,
doxing people, whether that's, you know, doing, and I think almost saying like trolling kind of trivializes the impact that it can have. Obviously,
You know,
in thinking about the Trump Tulsa rally, like it can have a pretty big impact. Like that made a real splash.
The murderer from the Charleston shooting, like, and pretty much every other mass shooter who has roots to white supremacy, which has seemed to be pretty much all of them, were on all of these websites that you mentioned. Like they would be.
Well, and the guy who did the massacre in New Zealand at the mosque, he was like deep in these kind of message boards and like put out a manifesto and was trying to inspire others to take this course of action that he had taken.
And to say that that's trolling, I think, you know, I guess trolling isn't even. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go on.
Right. And so to say that, like, you know, oh, the internet is good, and like having that debate of like, oh, internet good, internet bad, the internet is a tool and it can be used for a lot of different purposes. And I think it's interesting to see that left-leaning and progressive groups have taken to organizing in that way. I know on my Instagram feed I see people posting links and you click the link and there's it populates an entire email to the police department in Louisville, Kentucky, asking for, you know, Breonna Taylor's killers to be brought to justice, and all you have to do is put in your name. And I think it's inspiring to me in that it takes all of the possible roadblocks out of, you know, mobilizing people toward a common cause. Excuse me. But like that can be used for any number of things. Like for a long time, incels, you know, white nationalists deep in 4chan have also mobilized to hack different things, to, you know, send tweet storms somebody's way, you know.
Zoom bombing too, what we're seeing more and more now.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see that those sorts of tactics are being adopted by more than just sort of like the niche political cause of white nationalism.
I agree with you. I want to just clarify a couple of phrases that we use. Trolls, which are just horrible people that like to just, or robots sometimes, that like to just incite like just fights online. Or like to even mobilize, like trolls, like you said, mobilize. Like there was a whole campaign to, you know, surrounding one of the emojis that's on the, you know, on texting, which was co-opted by the, I don't even know what to call it, because they all go by so many names, but, you know, by white nationalists, saying that, oh, this is now our thing. So if you use it, that means you're a white nationalist. So, you know, people who aren't in these groups think that, you know, don't realize this, or it takes a while until it gets to the public or to more mainstream websites, and now all of a sudden you're like, oh, I didn't know this. And it's, you know, it's tactics, and it's a tool, and it's for everyone. So on Instagram you can have these things that give you you know, they populate emails, you know, give you resources. And then on the same exact platform, you can have another one that's like, you know, reclaiming Pepe the Frog as a white national symbol for some reason, which I still don't understand, but yeah, won't get into that.
Right. Yeah. The alt-right white nationalists are very good at, you know, and the other thing is that, like, if you're not in those circles, the time that you hear about it is when the media finally picks up on it and they're like, hey, the alt-right says they really like milk now, watch out for that. And then they immediately change whatever their coded language is to identify with each other. And then, it looks silly from the outside, but like, that there is this sort of like wild goose chase that happens in terms of, like, you know, news reporters trying to pin down what's going on and publicize what is important about it.
And then, like John said, when you have news sources that don't, you know, dive in and don't give the whole story, and like, you know, you mentioned, you know, piggyback on that, because they need to have like a
stream of revenue. So, you know, sometimes that gets in the way of doing real journalistic work. So, you know, it is a wild goose chase because it's not ever going to get to the bottom of it. And it's interesting, more and more we're seeing legislation being put around, you know, now websites are, was it, I forgot the name of the case, but it was when websites are now not liable for their content, but for their publishing or whatever that is. So there is,
right,
like,
they're trying to push that through the FCC. Not likely to happen, but it's an interesting thing, the way that the internet, has been able to flourish because website creators aren't liable for the content that others post there. But that too is not like necessarily for good or for bad.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a tool.
Depending on where you sit. Yeah, it's a tool.
Speaking of tools, Sona, any people calling on the telephone?
No, nothing on at the moment, but there is a line open, so folks who want to jump in can call at 503-231-8187, though we're running out of time, so do it quick.
Oh, we are running out of time. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah. Still have that song stuck in my head.
Amusing.
Yeah. Well, I think this was a very interesting conversation, and you know, with November coming up and the presidential elections, and with, you know, between Twitter putting fact checking on a, like you said, tool that the administration has been using to you know, spew out propaganda or misinformation or just, you know, racist and homophobic and just mean things, and then you got your K-poppers, you got your Zoomers, you got your millennials. I mean, you know. And then meanwhile, still, there's a virus happening. And the changes, you know, the societal changes that are happening, that statues coming down, you have money being reallocated, you have, you know, just serious change happening. And it's, you know, very uncomfortable and can be scary, and it's exhausting. But, you know, it's connections like this, in community radio and just, you know, being connected, I think is very important, whether it is on TikTok or community radio. And it's a service, and I'm glad to be part of it.
Yeah, same. And, you know, what I will say in sort of relation to what John termed a more pessimistic view of what may happen, I think there's a lot of forces at work and you know, like you mentioned, reallocating of money and re-envisioning the way that our systems work that really hasn't been explored in a big way, and that there's, you know, reason to believe that could be really, really successful. So I am not entirely given over to pessimism at this point in time.
Thank you. Sona, do you have any thoughts, anything you want to add?
Well, oh, all sorts of stuff comes up, and it's like, see, I'm old, so I lived through the time of video stores. So I use the analogy of, you want to see that movie and you're thinking about it all day, so you go to the video store after work and then you completely blank on what movie you wanted to see. Although I guess people could still experience that with, you know, like with whatever streaming service they use, and they finally get a chance to, when they get a chance to log on, they're like, oh wait, what was it? But
yeah, I get that on Netflix all the time. Like, what's going on? Why is this recommended to me?
Well, I guess I just want to, you know, if I could exit out gracefully, I'd like to thank all the listeners, and you know, we have at the palm of our hands, many of us, or those of us who have smartphones, we you know, landed on the moon with a lot less technology than what we are usually holding in our hand for trivial things like music and, you know, Instagramming. So we have a lot of powerful tools at our disposal, and you know, girls are powerful, so do your thing. Yep.
All right, signing off?
Signing off.
All right, thank you so much for listening. This has been
thank
The Gap.
You. It has been The Gap. I'm Sammy and that was Althea. Almost combined our name together. My goodness.
People should really be scared when that happens.
The force
with
be
our
recognized.
Powers combined.
Super Rangers. No, Super... Yeah,
Power Rangers?
Yeah. Power Rangers.
One of them.
One of them, yeah. Well, thank you.
Thanks,
so
Sonia.
Talthea.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, أهلا وسهلا